This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here, as always, with Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. Lots to talk about this week, starting with Mr. Radko Gudas, who will not be playing for the Philadelphia Flyers for the next 10 games. Biggest suspension of the year so far, tied with Luke Witkowski of the Red Wings, but his was an automatic suspension. So this one is the most significant at 10 games for Gudas. First big piece of discipline handed out by the Department of Player Safety with George Parros taking over as the head. I'm curious what you guys think, whether it was the right punishment, too short, too long. Ken, I know that you were blogging about it this week already, and I think you were feeling like it was too short, so I'm curious as to why.
Yeah, way too short. I think George Parros dropped the ball on this one, quite frankly. I mean, he's done a really good job to this point of keeping to his word and saying that they were going to crack down on a lot of stuff, and they weren't going to be tolerant of this kind of stuff. But this was the most egregious thing that we've seen all year, first of all. And secondly, I mean, it's very, very clear that Radko Gudas is not getting the message here. He's just not. And so now what do we do? Do we wait for another Rafi Torres incident, you know, before we do something with this guy? I mean, this guy is a menace. He's proved it. He's been constantly kicked out of games. He's been suspended twice before for really, really reckless play. And even if none of it's on purpose, it's all reckless. And I thought that we should have been starting at 20. Like, that should have been the starting point. And I wouldn't have had a problem with even, like, 30 or even 40 games for something like this. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, if I'm a team that's looking at a Radko Gudas and I say, okay, well, I'll sign this guy and, you know, maybe I'll miss him. Maybe he'll be out 5, 6, maybe 10 games a year, you know, for doing stuff like this. I'm willing to take that chance because he scares everybody else on the ice. And I don't know. As a league, I can't imagine you want that kind of player out there. And I just thought there was a much better opportunity to make a really, really bold, really, really impactful statement. And I just thought George Parros didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. I would have gone 20 games. And you could even bring back the Shanahan videos. It's like, we're going to look at this play, and here's our official statement. Dude! And that would be it. 20 games. Dude, seriously. Like, you look at the play, and it's like, yeah again, you could say, oh, you know, I didn't mean to do it, but it's like, that was pretty flagrant.
Yeah.
And you have to, for me, you have to look at what the potential consequence could have been.
Right.
You know, like, that could have been really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it could have been, you know, something that could have given the league like a pretty big black eye. And I think you have to, you know, kind of legislate against the worst implications in cases like that, where it's not a hockey play. You know, you can talk about, you know, with headshots, you know, it's like, well, I was trying to leave with my shoulder and the guy ducked and things like that. And it's like, okay, well, I can see the sort of gray area in those results. But, like, what was he trying to accomplish with that swing? I can only think of one thing.
Right, right. I'll play devil's advocate here with the disclaimer. Don't shoot the messenger here. I'm not saying this is how I feel. I'm saying this is how I think they think in the Department of Player Safety. So a couple things to note. Yes, Gudas was a repeat offender under the CBA because he had more than one suspension in the past 18 months. But if you compare him to Rafi Torres, the reason why Torres got 41 games, and this is not from my mind, this is what Stefan Quintel told me, was that it was the exact same play. It was specifically a shot to the head, a shoulder and elbow to the head. Whereas Gudas' previous suspensions were not for slashing. So they were different behaviors. So per the CBA and the way the department operates, Gudas wasn't repeating the same specific dangerous behavior. And also, Matthew Perreault was not injured. And what really lengthens the suspension are player injuries and repeating the exact same behavior. So those two factors worked in Gudas' favor. I still think, ultimately, in my mind, every suspension should be 3 times longer than it is.
Yeah.
But the problem is, the people who bargained the rules for suspensions in the CBA, it includes the NHLPA. So the NHLPA is kind of working against itself because, as I've probably said before on the podcast, it represents the victims of the crimes, but also the perpetrators. So I think these suspensions are still trying to operate under what was collectively bargained, and I think sometimes it constrains the length of the punishments.
Oh, it! I don't think you should think that, and you shouldn't say sometimes. It does.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely does. The PA's role in all of this, is definitely one that you have to take into account here. So, having said that, I'll go back to something you were saying. I won't shoot the messenger. Okay, first of all, but then so then if a guy's going to be a criminal, then he should probably just, you know, first time he should rob a bank, then he should kill somebody, and then he should extort money from somebody, and then maybe burn down a building. Because they're all different things.
If he uses different weapons,
right, he uses all different things. So, so really, you know, like, really, he's not that bad a guy. So that's a bunch of garbage, as far as I'm concerned. Again, not shooting the messenger.
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, if I'm George Parros, it's like, okay, I'm giving this guy 30 games. Okay, NHLPA, you come after me on that. Go ahead. I dare you to come after me on that. Because you know what? If you come after me on that, you're going to have to defend the indefensible. Go ahead. Put yourself in a situation where you have to defend a guy who took a baseball, basically a baseball swing at a guy's head with his stick. Go ahead.
Yeah, good luck.
Defend that. Good luck. Good luck defending the indefensible, because this guy's been told and told and told and told, and he still doesn't get it. And so if you want to defend that guy, go ahead. You can defend the indefensible.
And I think I like to use sometimes, I call it the oh, come on defense, and it's kind of like, okay, so Gudas, technically his previous suspensions were for different types of plays, but oh, come on. Mm-hmm. We know he's dangerous. He's very reckless. And I think
the
there's
most dangerous
a bit,
man in the NHL.
He's probably Brian Marchman or Ulf Samuelsson of this generation, I think. He's trending toward that type of status.
Yep.
And I do think it looked like he might have stumbled a little bit, but I think he's still would have been able to stop his momentum the way he was kind of falling a little bit, but he didn't have to fall through the way he did.
No.
So even if it was a slight stumble.
And did you see him afterwards? Like, he's like he's all perplexed.
Who, me?
Like, what? Like, oh, come on.
Yeah. So I don't know. I wish, in a perfect world, I mean, if they really want to change behavior, you got to do something that really deters it. And if Gudas is, if he's looking at half a season, and the amount of money he loses for that, then I think that would actually influence his behavior. But 10 games, I don't know.
And it would influence other people's behavior, too. And that you have to remember that as well. I mean, Rafi Torres got a 25-game suspension. And then he got, I think, a
41.
He got a 25-gamer. And then he got a 6-gamer in the playoffs, which is the equivalent of a 12-gamer.
Right.
Because two for one in the playoffs. And he still didn't learn, and then they still had to give him a 41-game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
So let's cut out the middleman here, and let's start giving out the suspensions that mean something, and then maybe, just maybe, these guys will learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Who knows?
Looking at the Calder Trophy race, it's funny. A couple weeks ago, and I forget whose tweet it was, but I saw someone said, hey, maybe we should pump the brakes on just giving Clayton Keller the Calder. And it's a good point, because I looked a couple weeks ago, Keller was running away with it. He had, I think, almost a goal per game. But he's gone cold. Ironically, as the Coyotes started winning games, Keller stopped scoring. And the man who's overtaken him in the points race among rookies is Matt Barzal.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Don Sweeney. He had 3 tries to pick that kid. So I'm curious. Do you guys think that the Calder race has changed? And is Barzal now looking like the best rookie in the league? Are you still feeling Clayton Keller? What do you think?
No, I think the race has narrowed considerably. I tweeted out on Saturday night. So which American-born guy is going to win the Calder this year? Is it going to be Keller, Besser, or
McAvoy?
No, it wasn't McAvoy. Who else? There's somebody else that's doing really well, an American rookie, and I can't remember who it is off the top of my head.
I can't remember. Oh, Will Butcher.
Yeah, Will Butcher. That was
Boom.
The guy. That was the guy. And you know, put McAvoy in there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Sergachev still is in the mix. You know, and Barzal, obviously, like I don't think anybody really thought that this guy was going to be as dynamic as he's been. You know, been a great, you know, he's had some really great success, with respect to being a really good assist guy. And I think the gap's closed considerably. I still sort of think it's Keller's to lose, because of the fact that he's doing it on a team that's just terrible. And I think there's something to be said for a guy, especially if he continues to play this way the rest of the year and he doesn't get beaten down by all the losing, and he actually, you know, contributes to a team that, you know, that might get a little bit better. I think, you know, I think that that probably would work in his favor a little bit. But I don't think it's the slam dunk that it was a couple of weeks ago, for sure.
Yeah, I would take almost the opposite tack in terms of the team results, because I feel like if a lot of the numbers are similar, if a lot of the offensive numbers are similar, then there's kind of a couple of tiebreakers in my mind. One would be, you know, like look at New Jersey as an example. The Devils are a lot better than anybody expected in the standings, and Will Butcher has been, you know, a pretty important part of that. So if he were to put up, you know, numbers from the blue line that were close to some of the best forwards, then you would look at his case and say, like, wow, like, we thought the Devils were going to be terrible, and thanks to Butcher and a couple of other young guys, they were actually pretty good. With Barzal, you know, the Islanders are in a playoff spot right now. They're in a wild card spot. That's probably around where we thought they would be. But, like, my only question with Keller at this point is, was he just getting points in these sort of meaningless games because Arizona was so bad? Like, what did those points actually mean?
Garbage time all-star.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, maybe he scored the first goal and then they let in six. So, you know, I haven't broken down when those goals were scored.
I actually have, and I don't have it with me, but he actually stands up pretty well in that department.
Okay.
Like, for a team. See, the problem is that when you play for a team like Arizona, you don't have a chance to score important goals.
Sure,
like, really, sure. Really, I mean, I think... And if I'm not mistaken, that one of their recent wins, one of the two recent wins that they've had against Montreal or Ottawa, was the first time this season that they've actually come back in a game when they were losing and come back to win.
Right,
you know, but he actually holds up fairly well in that situation. Mm. He scored some first goals of the game. He scored some goals that have tied the game and that sort of thing. So, again, you know, I mean, he can't help that, right?
No, he cannot.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, he's in a situation where it's a bad team. They haven't played up to expectation at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's starting to turn around. You know, we'll probably find out a little bit better tonight if they can put three in a row together against some okay teams. That then maybe they've got something going here. But, you know, I mean, he's just not in a position where he can have an effect on the game because they're out of game so much.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not his fault, but if you're going to go with tiebreakers, then I kind of look at that. And the other thing is, when you look at defensemen, you know, I've already talked about Will Butcher, and then Charlie McAvoy, right now he's leading all NHL rookies in average ice time. I think he's at like 23 minutes a game. And again, like if he puts up comparable offensive numbers while playing so much, then I think that strengthens his case once we get to the end of the year as well, because you have to look at how hard it is to play defense in the NHL versus being a winger in terms of the responsibility you get. So those are all sorts of factors that come in. But I would say at this point, it's still pretty wide open, and you look at how hot Brock Besser has been in Vancouver. Oh. And you know, and there's another guy where it's like the Canucks are probably like a little bit better than we thought they would be.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not in the playoff spot, but they're not at the bottom either. So I think it's nice that, you know, it's going to be very competitive, and there's a lot of options this year
for sure. And if we see McAvoy and a Butcher close at the end, we might see what we saw in Aaron Ekblad's rookie season, when the tiebreaker between him and Mark Stone and Johnny Gaudreau was probably the position he played and the fact that he was doing so well at such a young age. And especially to me, Butcher, like McAvoy had the elite pedigree, right, coming in. And most people think if they redrafted 2016, he'd be up borderline top, maybe even top three right after Matthews and Laine. Whereas Butcher is more of an underdog story coming in, never having touched the pro game. At least McAvoy got the cup of coffee in the playoffs last year.
Why don't they just put Rafalski on it?
Yeah, oh, he is Rafalski.
Why don't they just
same player.
Like, change it?
Same
and
size?
Just put Brian Rafalski.
Oh, man.
Rafalski.
That's really what I've been
sweater.
Saying. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so similar. It's uncanny. And it shows what an underdog he was. I was on the conference call with Butcher when he first signed. He said the player he looked up to was Andy Green. Like, Andy Green was his role model. No disrespect to Andy Green, but I don't picture a lot of Andy Green posters on kids' walls.
Aim high, Will.
Yeah, exactly. So he's already.
Andy got his first goal on the weekend.
Yeah, there you go. And I got him in my hockey pool, you guys.
Oh, good for you.
What interests me about Barzal is, you know, he's a guy we've watched closely for several years because he was so dominant out in the WHL, such a great playmaker. He had the ability to put up points in huge bunches, but his body was never seeming to catch up to him in time for him to make an impact at the NHL level. But finally, it's happening. It seems like it's happening in a big way. And I feel like that could have an effect on John Tavares as a free agent, because suddenly if the Islanders' future prospects look so different with Barzal as the number two center, I think maybe it's more likely that John Tavares considers re-signing with the Islanders. And the reason why I bring that up, kind of little bit of a transition to our next topic, and I'm wondering, other than John Tavares, who is the best remaining UFA forward out there now that Cam Atkinson has just re-signed with the Columbus Blue Jackets, 7-year extension last week? Who is the belle of the ball among the forwards right now, other than John Tavares?
Okay, other than John Tavares?
Yeah.
I guess you'd have to go with Evander Kane, I would think. You know, the season that he's putting together in Buffalo. You talked to him last week, Matt, when you went to Buffalo to do a piece on him for the Hockey News. So, you know, I mean, that's a guy that I think would be probably the guy. Maybe Van Riemsdyk if he gets that far. I don't know if he will. Yeah, again, I mean, the fact that it's like that we're talking about these guys really has seems to have changed the whole landscape of unrestricted free agency.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot out there.
Yeah, I mean, you build through the draft, you lock your guys up long term as soon as you can. And I would think that, you know, with Van Riemsdyk, he's probably the safest of the marquee free agent targets because you know what you're getting with him, and he's not going to command like a silly price on the open market. I think he's, you know, he knows what his value is. But you get a great net front presence, a guy that can really help out offensively. He's got size, and I mean, it's been a while, but he did go to a Stanley Cup final back in the day when he was with the Flyers.
Yep.
So he has some pretty good playoff experience throughout his career. And I think with Kane, he's in a great situation right now in Buffalo in terms of his spot in the offense. But we've seen him, get into some problems before that, obviously in Winnipeg, where the fit wasn't right. And if I was a conservative GM, I would say, like, okay, well, with JVR, maybe he doesn't have the same upside as Evander Kane. But I know what I'm getting, and I know there's going to be a certain base level of goals where over the course of an 82-game schedule, I'm probably going to get 30 from JVR.
Yeah, but you're right. But I think, too, that the potential for growth with a guy like Kane is bigger. Like,
yes.
It's a bigger risk-reward, right?
Yes,
the reward could be a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you say these things and then 2 days later something happens, but you got to think that Evander Kane's kind of figured it out by now.
Sure.
Like you would hope he has. You'd hope he's matured to the point where he knows how to comport himself and you know is going to be a better person in the room, a better influence around young players, all that sort of stuff too.
And I talked to him and the other Sabres about that at length, actually, and it was sort of, I don't want to give away too much about what's going to be in our next issue, but he's bonded, especially with Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, and what's interesting, you know, the stuff that the Sabres say about him, you never imagine hearing that kind of stuff from Winnipeg. And
mm-hmm.
It's like Evander Kane has finally found a place where he belongs. And I was saying to him, I said, you know, you must be feeling like you're at a bit of a crossroads because you're finally getting your chance at your biggest payday of your life. And your agent will tell you, this is it. This is your first year of unrestricted free agency, your chance to make your biggest payday that you'll ever have in your life. But at the same time, you finally found somewhere with a group of people that really seem to love you for who you are and accept you for who you are. Because as much as he has changed, he hasn't changed that much. And like just talking to him, he clearly does enjoy to live a fun lifestyle.
Sure.
But the Sabres teammates accept him for that. At the same time, no disrespect to the city of Buffalo, but you know it's a great hockey market, but it's a cold place and it's not like it's New York City or Los Angeles. And a guy like Evander Kane, if you're going to get an offer from you know, I'm looking at the Rangers, for example, they're going to have Rick Nash coming off the books.
Okay.
It's going to be very tempting for a guy like Kane who does love to have a fun lifestyle.
That'd be the worst.
So he's going to have to choose, right?
Life.
It's going to be a major crossroad. So that's why for me, and I agree, Ryan, especially with Kane's health history as well, to me, Kane's a better rental than a long-term signing. I think JVR is the better long-term guy. I don't think he'll even be available for rental this year. I do think Kane will be.
For sure.
But the other name I'm curious about is Joe Thornton. The Sharks right now are not in a playoff spot. They're in the mix, but they're not in a playoff spot. And do you guys think Joe Thornton starts to become talked about as a rental when we hit the winter if the Sharks are lingering around that playoff bubble?
Yeah, I do. And I think this place, Toronto, would be a prime destination for him.
Interesting.
I really, really do.
Like in the Brian Boyle, like a souped-up Brian Boyle?
Yeah.
Really like, souped-up
yeah,
Brian
very,
Boyle.
Very, very, like a
really expensive
$6 million
Brian
man,
Boyle.
Brian Boyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very, very possible that Joe Thornton is not going to be playing for the San Jose Sharks next year. Mm. And I think there's a very intriguing possibility of him being reunited with Patrick Marleau either at the trade deadline this year or ultimately next year.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the struggles that Tyler Bozak has had this season in Toronto, and you think about the Leafs down the middle. If you were going Auston Matthews, Nazem Kadri, Joe Thornton,
yeah,
Dominic Moore, then all of a sudden, like, that's matchup hell for pretty much anybody in the East.
He's still winning 55% of his mm-hmm. faceoffs. Yeah. He's, you know, I mean, there's a lot he still has to give, yeah. I think.
And if you're getting him at the deadline, then the salary isn't as much of a big deal because it's prorated, so you're only yeah. paying that, you know, percentage of the whole, which I think is a lot easier for a team to swallow than go on the whole stipend.
Right, and I do think money talks. Like, when you look at the contract Thornton signed in the summer, he was playing at a $6 million level. When you see he got $8 million, like, that screams, okay, we know we have to overpay you because you want to leave or you're threatening to
yeah.
leave.
Yeah.
Like, it reeked of Thornton has huge leverage. Like, yeah. to me, that's the message it sent. And because of that, I think he's, I don't know, I think there's a good chance that he walks in the summer if he's still going to keep playing, which I think he will if he's still playing at a high level.
Well, Joe Thornton strikes me as the kind of guy that's going to keep playing until 31 teams tell him he can't play anymore.
Right.
You know, like he's a hockey player, right?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
a hockey player, yeah. And there are guys like that. There are guys that will, you know, willingly sort of go quietly into the night, and there are other guys who, you know, you have to, you'll have to, like, pry the skates off his feet
and Gamera, yeah,
lock
yeah.
up the arena yeah. and not allow them in, you know? Yeah, and I think Joe's that kind of guy.
Yeah. For sure. We'll go to some reader questions now. We got some good ones this week. First one is from Steve Nitz, and he says, what's the best choice for the next round of expansion? Houston, Seattle, assuming the city gets an arena, or Quebec City? Great question, Steve.
Mm.
At this point, the best choice, I would say, would be Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have an arena, they have an owner who wants the NHL, they're a huge market, you know, presumably they'll be able to pay the, whatever it's going to be, $600 million expansion fee. You know, Seattle would be a great market too, but there's still uncertainty surrounding the arena until they get a building and it starts going up and there, you know, there's a real sort of palpable sense that this is going to happen. Then they're going to be on the outside looking in. Quebec City, I personally don't believe will ever be an expansion city. Quebec City will be what Winnipeg was.
Right.
And that's a landing place. Mm. So if the Arizona Coyotes, for example, or if the Carolina Hurricanes, for example, or if the Florida Panthers, for example, had to get out of Dodge the way Atlanta did,
right,
on quick, you know, fast, quick, and we need a place to play, you've got it in Quebec City. And I think that's what it always will be. And it may, you know, Quebec City may turn out to be the next Hamilton. It might be like, yeah, oh, yeah, okay, well, okay, fine. We're going to hold out this possibility of going to this place. And then all of a sudden they don't go and everybody there is like, bite me, you know? So, I mean, I do think that could happen with Quebec. Mm-hmm. We could see this, you know, Videotron Coliseum turn into the next Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, a place that never gets an NHL team and is always waiting for one.
Mm, yeah. I'm curious what the priorities are when it comes to the Board of Governors, the owners of the NHL in terms of these cities, because I would agree that I think they're all strong candidates, and I think Houston is, it seems like, you know, because it's such a big television market, geographically it works out for the NHL, which still has more teams in the East than the West, but like Quebec would obviously be the safest in terms of filling the building, having a fan base already, and it's funny, because I've been to Quebec City a couple of times in the past 2 years, and I was kind of surprised. I just kind of assumed that the locals would be like, I guess we'll cheer for Montreal now. No, they hate the Habs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I thought maybe it was like, well, I got to cheer for somebody. No, like, if you go into the sports stores, it's all Nordiques gear. Yeah,
that's awesome.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they don't like Montreal at all.
Well, they,
and good on them for it. You know, it's like, you got to have pride in your hometown.
Maintaining their loyalty.
Yeah, you got to have your arch rival. But, I mean, they're ready to go. But obviously, Houston's a bigger place and would have the bigger chance for the fan, you know, the fan base could be bigger if you marketed it properly, but I is that a concern? I don't know. Do NHL owners actually care how many people are in the building, or is it just a matter of the expansion fee and the television rights?
And, no, and they care about revenues too. They care about whether or not the team can create revenues, and that's where I think Quebec City has a problem. Because they'll fill the building. They'll, you know, whatever number of seats there are, 18,000 seats or whatever, for the sake of argument, they'll fill those seats, and they'll consistently fill those seats. But in Quebec, there's not exactly a huge corporate base, so that hurts them. And I think the other thing that hurts them is the Montreal Canadiens, who have a lot of sway in the NHL and hold a lot of power. They're in a situation where they will have to split up their market, and that will be a sore point with the Canadiens if it ever comes to that. I mean, the Canadiens have always said, they've always said the right things. Yeah, we want our provincial rivalry back and everything. But, you know, when it comes down to them taking money out of your pocket, it's going to be different.
Yeah. And I feel like I can see the pieces sort of fitting together down the road. I like Houston as a relocation team, because what you can do is, knowing Seattle isn't ready, if Arizona's arena lease ends at the end of the season, theoretically you could move Arizona to Houston that has a building, they have an owner who's open about wanting hockey there, and then Houston, the new Houston team that was Arizona, moves over to the Central Division, which only has 7 teams right now. Houston's in a central time zone, I believe. And then that leaves a new spot open in the Pacific, 7 teams in the Pacific, and then maybe a couple years down the road, Seattle's ready, and then they come in and move to that spot.
Yeah, but then what if Arizona finds a suburb around Phoenix that doesn't have a lot of money and gets them to build them a rink, and then they can play there, and oh, wait a minute.
It sounds like a great idea.
The Flagstaff Coyotes. The 2020 Yuma Coyotes.
Oh, boy. The Grand Canyon Coyote. Okay. The next question
is... They're kind of playing like they're in a hall.
The Wyoming Coyotes.
Hey-o. Next question is from Frank... I think it's Gliz. Let's go Gliz. The measuring stick is normally American Thanksgiving for the playoffs. Do you think the Vegas Golden Knights will maintain a spot while Edmonton stays out of the picture completely?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Because I keep waiting for something to happen in both of these places. Right. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop in Vegas, and I keep waiting for the Oilers to go, okay, it's time that we put this together now, and start playing. And neither of those things is happening.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Edmonton comes out, wins, beats somebody 8-2. I don't know who it was.
I think it was Vegas, ironically.
Yeah, it was Vegas, actually. Yeah, they just friggin' dummy them.
Yeah.
And then next two games, same old thing.
Yeah.
Same old things, giveaways. You know, now people are starting to get on McDavid.
The
goaltending and I just keep waiting for something to change, and it just doesn't. And I think with Vegas, I think the big thing will be how this team plays on the road. You know, they haven't had a lot of road games yet. They're lights out at home. They're what, 8-1 at home?
Mm-hmm. I think, and the NHL was generous. I think that was very deliberate, giving them a big home boost.
Yeah, they're 8-1 at home, which I mean, and I've watched a lot of their games, and when they play at home, like, they score 3 minutes into the game, then they score 6 minutes into the game, and then the final score is 5-2, and they've led the whole game, basically.
Yeah.
So they're very, very good at home. You know, so if they can maintain anything close to that, and even play, like, close to .500 on the road, they're in.
Yeah.
They're in.
I mean, it just kind of comes down to the mathematics, and that's why you use the American Thanksgiving as a marker, is that, you know, there's... with the loser point and everything like that, you can kind of you can kind of tread water as long as you've built up a nice little nest egg at the beginning. The only X factor for me with Edmonton is when Andreas Sequeira comes back, can he move the needle enough on that defense core that it changes the trajectory of the Oilers, where they suddenly go on a big streak? Like, does his presence elevate the play of Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larsson, who have been very disappointing so far? Like, does his presence mean that a shakeup where you get guys on different pairings and you utilize the guys that are actually going in the right direction, is it enough? Because
Ryan Kennedy, Ryan, yes. Ryan, Think about what you're saying, Ryan.
I know.
Think about what you're saying.
I know.
You're asking whether Andre Sequeira is going to save the Edmonton Oilers season. Let's just take a second and ponder that. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
Nobody say anything. We're pondering.
We're pondering.
Okay. Go ahead.
I did say it's an X factor. Maybe it's a Y factor. Even a Z factor.
Maybe a Z.
Yeah.
I'm wondering too. I mean, if you
pray for Connor,
like if you're the Oilers, do you treat this season as so important that it's win at all costs? And if you do, does that mean you're willing to sacrifice Todd McClellan mid-season and hope that you get a new coach and that surge you get when a new coach comes in? Or is it more, you know what, if by December they're not in a playoff spot, we may have to cut our losses on this year and we keep McClellan?
Dan Bylsma.
Yeah, Dan Bylsma.
We'll pull up Pittsburgh.
Well, if it's December and you're out of a playoff spot, you're sacrificing the season and keeping your coach? It doesn't...
Well, are you chalking up to bad luck and say, okay, well, we were good last year with McClellan.
But what's...
It's only a second year.
Is there any indication that there's any bad luck in Edmonton this year?
The analytics. Their analytics have been very favorable, especially offensive. So they've been... Especially in the first month of the season, were dominating teams. Like, they were number one in possession on the positive side, or on the offensive side.
But part of the problem is they don't have any good right wingers. So you can bring the puck into the zone and get some shots all you want, but if you don't have guys that can actually pull the trigger, then the whole house of cards
I mean, Montreal leads the league in shots per game. The Canadians are the number one team in shots per game, and they can't score. I mean,
yeah, they're pulling LA from the last couple of years, and the Daryl Sutter Kings.
Yeah, they're not good. They're not good. No, they are. I don't know. I mean, I think that a lot of Edmonton's problems are of their own making.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their goaltending hasn't been as good. They've been wildly, wildly inconsistent. They seem to get it's almost reverted back to that sort of country club where you got a bunch of guys who are pretty satisfied with themselves when they do something and then sort of take a few games off.
Yeah,
I think that's Edmonton's problem.
It's scary to think about, but it could be true.
And they're not fast. That's the problem. That's a big problem with Edmonton, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Is there... And I...
Like McDavid's fast, but not everybody else is. Yeah,
they're not
yeah.
fast, and I wonder if it's almost like they can't even keep up with McDavid, and and the model's flawed a little bit because if you're going to build around your best player being the fastest player in hockey, which he is, then your team should kind of have that identity too because it just doesn't seem like a good fit in a lot of ways.
I'll use that as a transition to our final question because you know who is fast, Jeff Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, the person's Twitter name is just a dash, so we'll just call this person Dash.
Hyphen, okay. Yeah.
And hyphen says, will Jeff Skinner get traded? I'll lead this one off, and I'll say I don't think so because Carolina needs more goals, not fewer goals. And yes, center is their greatest position of need, but still, I think you have to keep Skinner, even if you're not going to be able to re-sign him. He's just too big a part of their team, and they, if anything, they need to acquire another forward, not trade a forward. So I don't know. To me, even though just for fun to think about, Skinner would be a really neat fit on a McDavid line because there's someone who really could keep up with them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't see Ron Francis shopping or dealing Jeff Skinner. Do you guys?
Well, they tried last year.
Not
this year. Yeah. I mean, he's still got a year left after this year at 5.25-ish
or 5.75. Yeah. It's in the fives.
Holy crap! Where are you going to find a 35 goal scorer for that kind of money?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? No way would I be trading him because, like, first of all, you've got him for another year after this year. You still have all this summer to work out a deal with him, an extension with him. He's only 25?
Yeah.
He's 25. You know, so what are you going to do with this guy? Okay, so if you believe what everybody's saying, they've got the best young defense corps in hockey already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're not going to trade Jeff Skinner for somebody that's going to help you on defense because you've already got some good defensemen. You just went out and got Scott Darling. You're set in goal. So unless you think, you know, in a year and a half, you can't sign him and he's gone as a free agent anyways, that's one thing. Then deal with that next year. But Or you're just going to get this massive amount of massive number of futures, which is the last thing Carolina needs right now. They haven't made the playoffs since the Nixon administration. And so, come on. I mean, they've got to do something. They've got to show something. And this guy is a proven
37 last year. Yeah,
37 last year. It's not like 30 goal scorers just emerge out of ether. It's hard. They put a lot into developing this guy. They've had him since he was an 18-year-old. They lived through those first couple of years that got good, and then he sort of hit some speed bumps, and now he seems to be back. I think trading him would be the worst thing they could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of feel like Carolina just has to wait a little bit longer. So if they don't make the playoffs this year, I mean, that's going to be bad. And I recognize that. But at the same time, you look at how Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen are playing together. That's a huge plus. And
they're playing a lot better right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're on fire right now.
Yeah, Aho was an a-hole when it came to offense at the beginning of the year. He wasn't doing anything. But now he's been really good, yeah.
There you go. And they don't have a surefire number one center in their system right now. But I wonder, if you have such a good back end as they do, and you've got such skill up front, they got Martin Netish, who they drafted in the first round this year. He's back in the Czech Republic. I'm not saying he's going to be ready for the NHL next season, although he did play one game for them this year as a teenager. But, I mean, in a year or two, could he be ready enough to be that kind of 1B center, that level of a Kyle Turris, a Derek Brassard, teams that don't have a dominant number one guy, but they still succeed because they're led by their defense core. If you have him on line with Jeff Skinner and you've got Aho and Teravainen together and you still got Jordan Staal, that's a decent forward core for a team that is getting offense from the back end and getting great transition from the back end as well.
Maybe that works. And look at what Matt Duchene just brought in.
The moon.
Yeah, to me. I mean, okay. If that's the kind of package you're talking about for Jeff Skinner, okay, then let's start talking. But boy, oh boy, that's wow to trade a guy that can produce like that. I mean, that would be really that would have me scratching my
backward
head.
To go forward. Yep. Mm. Great question by the hyphen and everybody else. Thanks, guys and gals, whoever the hyphen is. And tune in next week. We'll keep it going. Thanks a lot.